This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Louise Fitzhugh's Harriet the Spy.
Book 1. Chapter 1. Harriet was trying to explain to Sport how to play town.
See, first you make up the name of the town, then you write down the names of all the people who live in it. You can't have too many or it gets too hard. I usually have 25. Sport was tossing a football in the air. They were in the courtyard of Harriet's house on East 87th Street in Manhattan. Then, when you know who lives there, you make up what they do. For instance, Mr. Charles Handley runs the filling station on the corner. Harriet spoke thoughtfully as she squatted next to the big tree, bending so low over her notebook that her long, straight hair touched the edges. "Don't you want to play football?" Sport asked. "Now listen, Sport, you never did this, and it's fun. Now over here, next to this curve in the mountain, we'll put the filling station. So if anything happens there, you remember where it is." Sport tucked the football under his arm and walked over to her. "That's nothing but an old tree root. What do you mean a mountain?" "That's a mountain. From now on, that's a mountain. Got it?" Harriet looked up into his face. Sport moved back a pace. "Looks like an old tree root," he muttered. Harriet pushed her hair back and looked at him seriously. "Sport, what are you going to be when you grow up?" "You know what? You know I'm going to be a ball player."
"Well, I'm going to be a writer. And when I say that's a mountain, that's a mountain." Satisfied, she turned back to her town. Sport put the football gently on the ground and knelt beside her, looking over her shoulder at the notebook in which she scribbled furiously. "Now, as soon as you've got all the men's names down, and their wives' names, and their children's names, then you figure out all their professions. You've got to have a doctor, a lawyer, and an Indian chief," Sport interrupted.
"No, someone who works in television."
"What makes you think they have television?"
"I say they do. And anyway, my father has to be in it, doesn't he?"
"Well, then put mine in too. Put a writer in it."
"Okay, we can make Mr. Jonathan Fishbein a writer. And let him have a son like me who cooks for him."
Sport rocked back and forth on his heels, chanting in sing-song. "And let him be 11 years old like me, and let him have a mother who went away and has all the money, and let him grow up to be a ball player."
"No," Harriet said in disgust.
"Then you're not making it up, don't you understand?"
Sport paused.
"No," he said.
"Just listen, Sport. See, now that we have all this written down, I'll show you where the fun is." Harriet got very businesslike. She stood up, then got on her knees in the soft September mud so she could lean over the little valley made between the two big roots of the tree. She referred to her notebook every now and then, but for the most part she stared intently at the mossy lowlands which made her town. "Now, one night, late at night, Mr. Charles Handley is in his filling station. He is just about to turn out the lights and go home because it is 9 o'clock and time for him to get ready for bed."
"But he's a grown-up!"
Sport looked intently at the spot occupied by the gas station. "In this town, everybody goes to bed at 9:30, Harriet said definitely.
"Oh," Sport rocked a little on his heels. "My father goes to bed at 9 in the morning. Sometimes I meet him getting up."
"And also, Dr. Jones is delivering a baby to Mrs. Harrison right over here in the hospital." "Here is the hospital, the Carterville General Hospital." She pointed to the other side of town. Sport looked at the left route.
"What is Mr. Fishbein, the writer, doing?"
Harriet pointed to the center of town. "He is in the town bar, which is right here." Harriet looked down at the town as though hypnotized. "Here's what happens. Now, this night, as Mr. Handley is just about to close up, a long, big, old black car drives up, and in it there are all these men with guns. They drive in real fast, and Mr. Hanley gets scared. They jump out of the car and run over and rob Mr. Hanley, who is petrified. They steal all the money in the gas station, then they fill up with gas free, and then they zoom off in the night. Mr. Hanley is all bound and gagged on the floor. Sport's mouth hung open. Well, then what? At this same minute, Mrs. Harrison's baby is born, and Dr. Jones says, "You have a fine baby girl, Mrs. Harrison. A fine baby girl. Ho, ho, ho. Make it a boy." "No, it's a girl. She already has a boy." "What does the baby look like?" "She's ugly." Now, also at this very minute, on the other side of town, over here past the gas station, almost to the mountain, the robbers have stopped at a farmhouse, which belongs to old Farmer Dodge. They go in and find him eating oatmeal because he doesn't have any teeth. They throw the oatmeal on the floor and demand some other food. He doesn't have anything but oatmeal, so they beat him up. Then they settle down to spend the night. Now, at this very minute, the police chief of Carterville, who is called Chief Herbert, takes a stroll down the main street. He senses something is not right, and he wonders what it is. "Harriet, get up out of that mud!" A harsh voice rang out from the third floor of the brownstone behind them. Harriet looked up. There was a hint of anxiety in her face.
Oh, golly, I'm not in the mud!"
The face of the nurse looking out of the window was not the best-looking face in the world, but for all its frowning, its sharp, dark lines, there was a kindness there.
"Harriet M. Welsh, you are to rise to your feet."
Harriet rose without hesitation.
"But listen, we'll have to play town standing up," she said plaintively.
"That's the best way," came back sharply, and the head disappeared.
Sports stood up, too.
"Why don't we play football, then?"
"No, look, if I just sit like this, I won't be in the mud." So saying, she squatted on her heels next to the town. Now, he senses that there is something wrong.
How can he? He hasn't seen anything, and it's all on the other side of town.
He just feels it. He's a very good police chief. "Well," Sports said dubiously. So, since he's the only policeman in town, he goes around and deputizes everybody, and he says to them, "Something is fishy in this here town. I feel it in my bones." And everybody follows him, and they get on their horses.
Horses!
Sport shrieked. They get in the squad car, and they drive around town until,
"Harriet!"
The back door slammed, and old Golly marched squarely toward them across the yard. Her long black shoes made a slap-slap noise on the brick.
"Hey, where are you going?"
asked Harriet, jumping up, because old Golly had on her outdoor things. Old Golly just had indoor things and outdoor things. She never wore anything as recognizable as a skirt, a jacket, or a sweater. She just had yards and yards of tweed, which enveloped her like a lot of discarded blankets, which ballooned out when she walked, and which she referred to as her things. "I'm going to take you somewhere. It's time you began to see the world. You're 11 years old, and it's time you saw something." She stood there above them, so tall that when they looked up, they saw the blue sky behind her head. Harriet felt a twinge of guilt, because she had seen a lot more than old Golly thought she had. But all she said was, "Oh, boy!" and jumped up and down.
"Get your coat and hurry. We're leaving right now."
Old Golly always did everything right now.
"Come on, Sport. It won't hurt you to look around, too."
"I have to be back at 7 to cook dinner." Sport jumped up as he said this.
"We'll be back long before that. Harriet and I eat at 6. Why do you eat so late?"
"He has cocktails first. I have olives and peanuts."
"That's nice. Now go get your coats."
Sport and Harriet ran through the back door, slamming it behind them.
"What's all the noise?"
spluttered the cook, who whirled around just in time to see them fly through the kitchen door and up the back stairs. Harriet's room was at the top of the house, so they had 3 flights to run up, and they were breathless by the time they got there. "Where are we going?" Sport shouted after Harriet's flying feet. "I don't know," Harriet panted as they entered her room, "but old Golly always has good places." Sport grabbed his coat and was out the door and halfway down the steps when Harriet said, "Wait, wait, I can't find my notebook." "Oh, what do you need that for?" Sport yelled from the steps. "I never go anywhere without it," came the muffled answer. "Oh, come on, Harriet." There were great crashing noises coming from the bedroom. "Harriet, did you fall down?" A muffled but very relieved voice came out. "I found it. It must have slipped behind the bed." And Harriet emerged, clutching a green composition book. "You must have 100 of them now," Sport said, as they went down the steps. "No, I have 14. This is number 15. How could I have 100? I've only been working since I was 8, and I'm only 11 now. I wouldn't even have this many, except at first I wrote so big my regular route took almost the whole book."
"You see the same people every day?"
"Yes, this year I have the DeSanti family, Little Joe Curry, the Robinsons, Harrison Withers, and a new one, Mrs. Plummer. Mrs. Plummer is the hardest because I have to get in the dumbwaiter."
"Can I go with you sometime?"
"No, silly. Spies don't go with friends. Anyway, we'd get caught if there were 2 of us.
Why don't you get your own route?"
"Sometimes I watch out my window, a window across the way."
"What happens there?"
"Nothing. A man comes home and pulls the shade down."
"That's not very exciting."
"It sure isn't." They met old Golly waiting for them, tapping her foot outside the front door. They walked to 86th Street, took the crosstown bus, and soon were whizzing along in the subway, sitting in a line. Old Golly, then Harriet, then Sport. Old Golly stared straight ahead. Harriet was scribbling furiously in her notebook.
"What are you writing?" Sport asked. "I'm taking notes on all those people who are sitting over there."
"Why?"
"Ah, Sport," Harriet was exasperated,
"because I've seen them and I want to remember them." She turned back to her book and continued her notes. "Man with rolled white socks, fat legs. Woman with 1 cross eye and a long nose. Horrible-looking little boy and a fat blonde mother who keeps wiping his nose off. Funny lady looks like a teacher and is reading. I don't think I'd like to live where any of these people live or do the things they do. I bet that little boy is sad and cries a lot. I bet that lady with the cross eye looks in the mirror and just feels terrible." Old Golly leaned over and spoke to them. "We're going to Far Rockaway. It's about 3 stops from here. I want you to see how this person lives, Harriet. This is my family." Harriet almost gasped. She looked up at Old Golly in astonishment, but Old Golly just stared out the window again. Harriet continued to write.
"This is incredible. Could Old Golly have a family? I never thought about it. How could Old Golly have a mother and a father? She's too old, for one thing, and she's never said 1 word about them, and I've known her since I was born. Also, she doesn't get any letters. Think about this. This might be important." They came to their stop, and Old Golly led them off the subway.
"Gee," said Sport, as they came up onto the sidewalk, "we're near the ocean." And they could smell it, the salt, and even a wild, soft spray which blew gently across their faces, then was gone.
"Yes," said Old Golly briskly.
Harriet could see a change in her. She walked faster and held her head higher. They were walking down a street that led to the water. The houses, set back from the sidewalk with a patch of green in front, were built of yellow brick interspersed with red. It wasn't very pretty, Harriet thought, but maybe they liked their houses this way better than those plain red brick ones in New York. Old Golly was walking faster and looking sterner. She looked as though she wished she hadn't come. Abruptly, she turned in at a sidewalk leading to a house. She strode relentlessly up the steps, never looking back, never saying a word. Sport and Harriet followed, wide-eyed, up the steps to the front door, through the front hall, and out the back door. "She's lost her mind," Harriet thought. She and Sport looked at each other with raised eyebrows. Then they saw that Old Golly was heading for a small private house, which sat in its own garden behind the apartment house. Harriet and Sport stood still, not knowing what to do. This little house was like a house in the country, the kind Harriet saw when she went to Water Mill in the summer. The unpainted front had the same soft gray of driftwood, the roof a darker gray. "Come on, chickens, let's get us a hot cup of tea." Old Golly, suddenly gay, waved from the funny little rotting porch. Harriet and Sport ran toward the house, but stopped cold when the front door opened with a loud swish. There, suddenly, was the largest woman Harriet had ever seen. "Why, look a here, what's coming?" she bellowed. "Look a them little rascals!" And her great fat face crinkled into large, cheerful lumps as her mouth split to show a toothless grin. She let forth a high, burbling laugh. Sport and Harriet stood staring, their mouths open. The fat lady stood like a mountain, her hands on her hips, in a flowered cotton print dress and enormous hanging coat sweater. Probably the biggest sweater in the world, thought Harriet. Probably the biggest pair of shoes, too. And her shoes were a wonder. Long, long, black, bumpy things with high, laced sides up to the middle of the shin, bulging with the effort of holding in those ankles, their laces splitting them into grins against the white of the socks below. Harriet fairly itched to take notes on her. "Where'd you get these little things?" Her cheer rang out all over the neighborhood. "This the little Welsh baby? That her brother?" Sport giggled. "No, it's my husband," Harriet shouted. Old Golly turned a grim face. "Don't be snarky, Harriet, and don't think you're such a wit either." The fat lady laughed, making her face fall in lumps again. She looks like dough, Harriet thought, about to be made into a big, round Italian loaf. She wanted to tell Sport this, but Old Golly was leading them in, all of them squeezing past that mountain of a stomach because the fat lady stood, rather stupidly, in the doorway. Old Golly marched to the tea kettle and put a fire under it. Then she turned in a businesslike way and introduced them. "Children, this is my mother, Mrs. Golly. Mother, you can close the door now, Mother. This is Harriet Welsh." "Harriet M. Welsh," Harriet corrected. "You know perfectly well you have no middle name, but if you insist, Harriet M. Welsh. And this is Sport. What's your last name, Sport?"
"Rock. Simon Rock."
"Simon, Simon." Harriet felt very ugly all of a sudden.
"You are not to make fun of anyone's name."
Old Golly loomed over Harriet, and it was one of those times when Harriet knew she meant it.
"I take it back," Harriet said quickly.
"That's better." Old Golly turned away cheerfully.
"Now let's all sit down and have some tea."
"Well, ain't she a cute little thing?"
Harriet could see that Mrs. Golly was still hung up on the introductions. She stood like a mountain, her big ham hands dangling helplessly at her sides.
"Sit down, Mother," Old Golly said gently, and Mrs. Golly sat. Harriet and Sport looked at each other. The same thought was occurring to both of them. This fat lady wasn't very bright. Mrs. Golly sat to the left of Harriet. She leaned over Harriet, in fact, and looked directly into her eyes. Harriet felt like something in a zoo.
"Now, Harriet, look around you," Old Golly said sternly as she poured the tea. "I brought you here because you've never seen the inside of a house like this. Have you ever seen a house that has one bed, one table, four chairs, and a bathtub in the kitchen?" Harriet had to move her chair back to see around Mrs. Golly, who leaned toward her, motionless, still looking. The room was a strange one. There was a sad little rug next to the stove. Harrison Withers has only a bed and a table, Harriet thought to herself. But since she didn't want old Golly to know she had been peering through Harrison Withers' skylight, she said nothing. "I didn't think you had," said old Golly. "Look around, and drink your tea, children. You may have more milk and sugar if I haven't put enough."
"I don't drink tea," Sports said timidly.
Old Golly shot an eye at him. "What do you mean you don't drink tea?"
"I mean I never have."
"You mean you've never tasted it?"
"No,"
said Sport, and looked a little terrified. Harriet looked at Old Golly. Old Golly wore an arch expression which signified that she was about to quote. "There are few hours in life more agreeable than the hour dedicated to the ceremony known as afternoon tea." Old Golly said this steadily and sedately, then leaned back in her chair with a satisfied look at Sport. Sport looked completely blank. "Henry James," said Old Golly. 1843-1916. From Portrait of a Lady.
"What's that?" Sport asked Harriet.
"A novel, silly," said Harriet.
"Oh, like my father writes,"
said Sport, and dismissed the whole thing.
"My daughter's a smart one,"
mumbled Mrs. Golly, still looking straight at Harriet. "Behold, Harriet," Old Golly said. "A woman who never had any interest in anyone else, nor in any book, nor in any school, nor in any way of life, but has lived her whole life in this room, eating and sleeping and waiting to die." Harriet stared at Mrs. Golly in horror. Should Old Golly be saying these things? Wouldn't Mrs. Golly get mad? But Mrs. Golly just sat looking contentedly at Harriet. Perhaps, thought Harriet, she forgets to turn her head away from something unless she is told.
"Try it, Sport. It's good."
Harriet spoke to Sport quickly in an effort to change the subject. Sport took a sip.
"It's not bad,"
he said weakly. "Try everything, Sport, at least once." Old Golly said this as though her mind weren't really on it. Harriet looked at her curiously.
Old Golly was acting very strangely indeed. Was she angry? No, not angry. She seemed sad.
Harriet realized with a start that it was the first time she had ever seen Old Golly look sad. She hadn't even known Old Golly could be sad. Almost as though she were thinking the same thing, Old Golly suddenly shook her head and sat up straight. "Well," she said brightly, "I think we have had enough tea and enough sights for one day. I think we had better go home now." The most extraordinary thing happened next. Mrs. Golly leaped to her fat feet and threw her teacup down on the floor.
"You're always leaving! You're always leaving!" she screamed.
"Now, Mother," Old Golly said calmly. Mrs. Golly hopped around the middle of the floor like a giant doll. She made Harriet think of those balloons blown up like people that bounce on the end of a string. Sport giggled suddenly. Harriet felt like giggling, but wasn't sure she should. Mrs. Golly bobbed away.
"Just come here to leave me again. Always leaving. Thought you'd come for good this time."
"Now, Mother," Old Golly said again, but this time got to her feet, walked to her mother, and laid a firm hand on the bouncing shoulder. "Mother," she said gently, "you know I'll be here next week."
"Oh, that's right,"
said Mrs. Golly. She stopped jumping immediately and gave a big smile to Harriet and Sport.
"Oh, boy,"
said Sport under his breath. Harriet sat fascinated. Then Old Golly got them all bundled into their clothes, and they were outside on the street again, having waved to a cheerful Mrs. Golly. They walked along through the darkening day.
"Boy, oh boy," was all Sport could say.
Harriet couldn't wait to get back to her room to finish her notes. Old Golly looked steadily ahead. There was no expression on her face at all. Chapter 2. When Harriet was ready for bed that night, she took out her notebook. She had a lot to think about. Tomorrow was the beginning of school. Tomorrow she would have a quantity of notes to take on the changes that had taken place in her friends over the summer. Tonight she wanted to think about Mrs. Golly.
I think that looking at Mrs. Golly must make old Golly sad. My mother isn't as smart as old Golly, but she's not as dumb as Mrs. Golly. I wouldn't like to have a dumb mother. It must make you feel very unpopular. I think I would like to write a story about Mrs. Golly getting run over by a truck, except she's so fat, I wonder what would happen to the truck. I had better check on that. I would not like to live like Mrs. Golly, but I would like to know what goes on in her head. Harriet put the book down and ran into Old Golly's room to kiss her goodnight. Old Golly sat in a rocker in the light of an overhead lamp, reading.
Harriet flew into the room and bounded right into the center of the billowy yellow quilt which covered the single bed. Everything in the room was yellow, from the walls to the vase of chrysanthemums. Old Golly took to yellow, as she put it. "Take your feet off the bed," Old Golly said without looking up.
"What does your mother think about?" asked Harriet. "I don't know," said Old Golly in a musing way, still looking at her book. "I've wondered that for years." "What are you reading?" Harriet asked.
"Dostoevsky." "What's that?" asked Harriet in a thoroughly obnoxious way. "Listen to this," Old Golly said, and got that quote look on her face. "Love all God's creation, the whole and every grain of sand in it. Love every leaf, every ray of God's light. Love the animals, love the plants, love everything. If you love everything, you will perceive the divine mystery in things. Once you perceive it, you will begin to comprehend it better every day. And you will come at last to love the whole world with an all-embracing love."
"What does that mean?" Harriet asked after she had been quiet a minute. "What do you think it means?"
"Well, maybe if you love everything, then I guess you'll know everything. Then seems like you love everything more. I don't know. Well, that's about it."
Old Golly looked at Harriet in as gentle a way as she could, considering the fact that her face looked like it was cut out of oak.
"I want to know everything, everything!" screeched Harriet suddenly, lying back and bouncing up and down on the bed. "Everything in the world, everything, everything! I will be a spy and know everything!"
"It won't do you a bit of good to know everything if you don't do anything with it. Now get up, Miss Harriet the Spy, you're going to sleep now."
And with that, Old Golly marched over and grabbed Harriet by the ear.
"Ouch," said Harriet as she was led to her room, but it really didn't hurt. "There now, into bed."
"Will Mommy and Daddy be home in time to kiss me goodnight?"
"They will not,"
said Old Golly as she tucked Harriet in. "They went to a party. You'll see them in the morning at breakfast. Now to sleep, instantly."
"Hee-hee," said Harriet. "Instant sleep. And not another word out of you. Tomorrow you go back to school."
Old Golly leaned over and gave her a hard little peck on the forehead.
Old Golly was never very kissy, which Harriet thought was just as well, as she hated it. Old Golly turned the light out, and Harriet listened to her go back into her room, which was right across the hall, pick up her book, and sit down in the rocker again. Then Harriet did what she always did when she was supposed to be asleep. She got out her flashlight, put the book she was currently reading under the covers, and read happily until Old Golly came in and took the flashlight away, as she did every night.
The next morning, Mrs. Welsh asked, "Wouldn't you like to try a ham sandwich, or egg salad, or peanut butter?"
Her mother looked quizzically at Harriet while the cook stood next to the table, looking enraged.
"Tomato," said Harriet, not even looking up from the book she was reading at breakfast.
"Stop reading at the table!"
Harriet put the book down.
"Listen, Harriet, you've taken a tomato sandwich to school every day for 5 years. Don't you get tired of them?"
"No."
"How about cream cheese and olive?"
Harriet shook her head. The cook threw up one arm in despair.
"Pastrami, roast beef, cucumber, tomato."
Mrs. Welsh raised her shoulders and looked helplessly at the cook. The cook grimaced. "Sat in her ways," the cook said firmly and left the room. Mrs. Welsh took a sip of coffee.
"Are you looking forward to school?"
"Not particularly." Mr. Welsh put the paper down and looked at his daughter.
"Do you like school?"
"No," said Harriet.
"I always hated it," said Mr. Welsh, and went back behind the paper.
"Dear, you mustn't say things like that. I rather liked it. That is, when I was 11, I did."
Mrs. Welsh looked at Harriet as though expecting an answer. Harriet didn't know what she felt about school.
"Drink your milk," said Mrs. Welsh.
Harriet always waited until her mother said this, no matter how thirsty she was.
It made her feel comfortable to have her mother remind her.
She drank her milk, wiped her mouth sedately, and got up from the table. Old Golly came into the room on her way to the kitchen.
"What do you say when you get up from the table, Harriet?"
Mrs. Welsh asked absent-mindedly.
"Excuse me," said Harriet.
"Good manners are very important, particularly in the morning," snapped Old Golly as she went through the door.
Old Golly was always horribly grumpy in the morning. Harriet ran very fast all the way up to her room.
"I'm starting the sixth grade,"
she yelled, just to keep herself company. She got her notebook, slammed her door, and thundered down the steps.
"Goodbye! Goodbye!"
she yelled, as though she were going to Africa, and slammed out the front door. Harriet's school was called the Gregory School, having been founded by a Miss Eleanor Gregory around the turn of the century. It was on East End Avenue, a few blocks from Harriet's house, and across the street from Carl Schurz Park. Harriet skipped away down East End Avenue, hugging her notebook happily. At the entrance to her school, a group of children crowded through the door. More stood around on the sidewalk. They were all shapes and sizes, and mostly girls, because the Gregory School was a girls' school. Boys were allowed to attend up through the sixth grade, but after that, they had to go someplace else. It made Harriet sad to think that after this year, sport wouldn't be in school. She didn't care about the others. In particular, about Pinky Whitehead, she didn't care, because she thought he was the dumbest thing in the world. The only other boy in her class was a boy Harriet had christened the boy with the purple socks, because he was so boring no one ever bothered to remember his name. He had come to the school last year, and everyone else had been there since the first grade. Harriet remembered that first day when he had come in with those purple socks on. Who ever heard of purple socks? She figured it was lucky he wore them. Otherwise, no one would have even known he was there at all. He never said a word. Sport came up to her as she leaned against a fire hydrant and opened her notebook.
"Hi,"
he said.
"Hi. Anyone else here yet?"
"Just that dumb boy with the purple socks."
Harriet wrote quickly in her notebook. "Sometimes Sport looks as though he's been up all night. He has funny little dry things around his eyes. I worry about him." "Sport, did you wash your face?"
"Huh? No, I forgot."
Harriet said disapprovingly, and Sport looked away. Actually, Harriet hadn't washed hers either, but you couldn't tell it.
"Hey, there's Janie!"
Sport pointed up the street. Janie Gibbs was Harriet's best friend besides Sport. She had a chemistry set and planned one day to blow up the world. Both Harriet and Sport had a great respect for Janie's experiments, but they didn't understand a word she said about them.
Janie came slowly toward them, her eyes apparently focused on a tree across the street in the park. She looked odd walking that way, her head turned completely to the right like a soldier on parade. Both Sport and Harriet knew she did this because she was shy and didn't want to see anyone, so they didn't mention it. She almost bumped into them.
Hi.
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 That over, they all stood there.
Oh dear, said Janie, another year. Another year older and I'm no closer to my goal.
Sport and Harriet nodded seriously. They watched a long black limousine driven by a chauffeur. It stopped in front of the school. A small blonde girl got out.
There's that dreadful Beth Ellen Hansen, said Janie with a sneer.
Beth Ellen was the prettiest girl in the class, so everyone despised her, particularly Janie, who was rather plain and freckled. Harriet took some notes. Janie gets stranger every year. I think she might blow up the world. Beth Ellen always looks like she might cry.
Rachel Hennessy and Marion Hawthorne came walking up together. They were always together.
Good morning, Harriet, Simon, Jane, Marion Hawthorne said very formally.
She acted like a teacher, as though she were 1 minute from rapping on the desk for attention. Rachel did everything Marion did, so now she looked down her nose at them and nodded hello one quick jerk of the head. The two of them went into the school then.
Are they not too much? Janie said and looked away in disgust.
Carrie Andrews got off the bus. Harriet wrote, Carrie Andrews is considerably fatter this year. Laura Peters got out of the station wagon bus. Harriet wrote, and Laura Peters is thinner and uglier. I think she could use some braces on her teeth.
Oh, boy, said Sport.
They looked, and there was Pinky Whitehead. Pinky was so pale, thin, and weak that he looked like a glass of milk, a tall, thin glass of milk. Sport couldn't bear to look at him. Harriet turned away from habit, then looked back to see if he had changed. Then she wrote, Pinky Whitehead has not changed. Pinky Whitehead will never change. Harriet consulted her mental notes on Pinky. He lived on 88th Street. He had a very beautiful mother, a father who worked on a magazine, and a baby sister 3 years old. Harriet wrote,
My mother is always saying Pinky Whitehead's whole problem is his mother. I'd better ask her what that means, or I'll never find out. Does his mother hate him?
If I had him, I'd hate him.
Well, it's time to go in, said Sport in a tired voice.
Yeah, let's get this over with, said Janie, and turned toward the door. Harriet closed her notebook, and they all went in. Their first period was assembly in the big study hall. Miss Angela Whitehead, the present dean, stood at the podium. Harriet scribbled in her notebook as soon as she took her seat.
Miss Whitehead's feet look larger this year.
Miss Whitehead has buck teeth, thin hair, feet like skis, and a very long hanging stomach. Old Golly says description is good for the soul and clears the brain like a laxative. That should take care of Miss Whitehead.
Good morning, children.
Miss Whitehead bowed as gracefully as a pussy willow. The students rose in a shuffling body.
Good morning, Miss Whitehead,
they intoned, an undercurrent of grumbling rising immediately afterward like a second theme. Miss Whitehead made a short speech about gum and candy wrappers being thrown all over the school. She didn't see any reason for this. Then followed the readings. Every morning, two or three older girls read short passages from books, usually the Bible. Harriet never listened. She got enough quotes from Old Golly. She used this time to write in her book.
Old Golly says there is as many ways to live as there are people on the earth, and I shouldn't go round with blinders, but should see every way I can. Then I'll know what way I want to live, and not just live like my family. I'll tell you one thing, I don't want to live like Miss Whitehead.
The other day, I saw her in the grocery store, and she bought one small can of tuna, one Diet Cola, and a package of cigarettes. Not even one tomato. She must have a terrible life. I can't wait to get back to my regular spy route this afternoon. I've been away all summer, and those houses in the country are too far away from each other. To get much done, I would have to drive. Assembly was over. The class got up and filed into the sixth grade room. Harriet grabbed a desk right across the aisle, one way from Sport and the other way from Janie. "Hey," Sport said, because he was glad. If they hadn't been able to grab these desks, it would have been hard passing notes. Miss Elson stood at her desk. She was their homeroom teacher. Harriet looked at her curiously, then wrote, "I think Miss Elson is one of those people you don't bother to think about twice." She slammed the notebook shut as though she had put Miss Elson in a box and slammed the lid. Miss Elson called the roll, and her voice squeaked.
"Andrews? Gibbs? Hanson? Hawthorne? Hennessy? Matthews? Peters? Roque? Welsh? Whitehead?"
Everyone said "here" dutifully.
"And now, children, we will have the election for officer. Are there any nominations?"
Sport leapt to his feet.
"I nominate Harriet Welsh,"
Janie yelled.
"I second it."
They always did this every year because the one that was officer controlled everything. When the teacher went out of the room, the officer could write down the names of anyone who was disorderly. The officer also got to be the editor of the sixth grade page in the school paper. Rachel Hennessy got up.
"I nominate Marion Hawthorne," she said in her prissiest voice.
Marion Hawthorne shot Beth Ellen Hansen a look that made Harriet's hair stand on end. Beth Ellen looked terrified, then got timidly to her feet and, almost whispering, managed to stammer,
"I second it."
It was rigged, the whole thing, every year. There were no more nominations, and then came the vote. Marion Hawthorne got it. Every year, either Marion or Rachel Hennessy got it. Harriet wrote in her book, "You'd think the teachers would smell a rat, because it's 5 years now, and neither me nor Sport nor Janie has ever gotten it." Marion Hawthorne looked terribly smug. Sport, Janie, and Harriet scowled at each other. Janie whispered, "Our day will come. Just wait." Harriet wondered if she meant that when she blew up the world, Marion Hawthorne would see what they were made of. Or maybe Janie meant to blow up Marion Hawthorne first, which wasn't a bad idea. It was finally 3:37, and school was over. Sport came up to Harriet.
"Hey, why don't you come over this afternoon? After the spy route, maybe, if I've got time." "Aw, gee, Janie's working in the lab. You both are always working."
"Why don't you practice? How are you ever going to be a ball player?"
"Can't. Have to clean the house. Come over if you get time."
Harriet said, "Okay." Then, "Goodbye," and ran toward the house. It was time for her cake and milk. Every day at 3:40, she had cake and milk. Harriet loved doing everything every day in the same way.
"Time for my cake! For my cake and milk! Time for my milk and cake!"
She ran yelling through the front door of her house. She ran through the front hall, past the dining room and the living room, and down the steps into the kitchen. There she ran smack into the cook.
"Like a missile you are, shot from that school," screamed the cook.
"Hello, cook! Hello, cookie! Hello, 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 hello," sang Harriet.
Then she opened her notebook and wrote, "Blah, blah, blah. I always do carry on a lot. Once Olgali said to me, 'I could never lose you in a crowd. I'd just follow the sound of your voice.'" She slammed the notebook and the cook jumped. Harriet laughed. The cook put the cake and milk in front of her. "What you always writing in that dad-blamed book for?" she asked with a sour little face.
"Because," Harriet said around a bite of cake, "I'm a spy."
"Spy, huh? Some spy."
I am a spy. I'm a good spy, too. I've never been caught.
Cook settled herself with a cup of coffee.
How long you been a spy?
Since I could write.
Olgali told me if I was going to be a writer, I better write down everything, so I'm a spy that writes down everything.
Phew! Harriet knew the cook couldn't think of anything to say when she did that.
I know all about you.
Like fun you do. The cook looked startled.
I do, too. I know you live with your sister in Brooklyn, and that she might get married, and you wish you had a car, and you have a son that's no good and drinks.
What do you do, child? Listen at doors?
Yes, said Harriet.
Well, I never, said the cook. I think that's bad manners.
Olgali doesn't. Olgali says find out everything you can, 'cause life is hard enough even if you know a lot.
I bet she don't know you spookin' round this house listening at doors.
Well, how am I supposed to find out anything?
I don't know. The cook shook her head. I don't know about that old golly.
What do you mean?
Harriet felt apprehensive. I don't know. I just don't know. I wonder about her.
Old golly came into the room.
What is it you don't know?
Cook looked as though she might hide under the table. She stood up.
Can I get you your tea, Miss Golly?
She asked meekly.
That would be most kind of you, said Old Golly, and sat down. Harriet opened her notebook. I wonder what that was all about. Maybe Old Golly knows something about Cook that Cook doesn't want her to know. Check on this.
What do you have in school this year, Harriet? Asked Old Golly.
English, history, geography, French, math, ugh, science,
ugh, and the performing arts, ugh, ugh, ugh. Harriet rattled these off in a very bored way.
What history?
Greeks and Romans, ugh, ugh, ugh.
They're fascinating.
What?
They are. Just wait, you'll see. Talk about spies. Those gods spied on everybody all the time.
Yeah?
Yes, Harriet, not yeah.
Well, I wish I'd never heard of them.
Ah, there's a thought from Aesop for you. We would often be sorry if our wishes were gratified.
Old Golly gave a little moo of satisfaction after she had delivered herself of this.
I think I'll go now, Harriet said.
Yes, said the cook. Go out and play.
Harriet stood up.
I do not go out to play. I go out to work.
And in as dignified a way as possible, she walked from the room and up the steps from the kitchen.
Then she began to run, and running furiously, she went past the first floor with the living room and dining room, the second floor with her parents' bedroom and the library, and on up to the third floor to her little room and bath.
Harriet loved her room. It was small and cozy, and the bathroom was a little one with a tiny window which looked out over the park across the street. Her room had a bigger window. She looked around, pleased as always by the order, the efficiency of it. She always picked up everything immediately, not because anyone nagged at her. No one ever had, but because it was her room and she liked to have it just so. Harriet was just so about a lot of things. Her room stood around her pleasantly, waiting for her. Her own small bed next to the window, her bookcase filled with her books, her toy box, which had been filled with toys but which now held her notebooks, because it could be locked, her desk and chair at which she did her homework. All seemed to look back at her with affection. Harriet put her books down on the desk and hurriedly began to change into her spy clothes. Her spy clothes consisted, first of all, of an ancient pair of blue jeans, so old that her mother had forbidden her to wear them, but which Harriet loved because she had fixed up the belt with hooks to carry her spy tools. Her tools were a flashlight, in case she were ever out at night, which she never was, a leather pouch for her notebook, another leather case for extra pens, a water canteen, and a Boy Scout knife, which had, among other features, a screwdriver and a knife and fork which collapsed. She had never had occasion to eat anywhere, but someday it might come in handy. She attached everything to the belt, and it all worked fine except that she rattled a little. Next, she put on an old dark blue sweatshirt with a hood which she wore at the beach house in the summer so that it still smelled of salt air in a comforting way. Then she put on an old pair of blue sneakers with holes over each of her little toes. Her mother had actually gone so far as to throw these out, but Harriet had rescued them from the garbage when the cook wasn't looking. She finished by donning a pair of black-rimmed spectacles with no glass in them. She had found these once in her father's desk, and now sometimes wore them even to school, because she thought they made her look smarter. She stood back and looked at herself in the full-length mirror which hung on her bathroom door. She was very pleased. Then she ran quickly down the steps and out, banging the front door behind her. Chapter 3. She was particularly excited as she ran along because today she was adding a new spying place to her route. She had discovered a way into a private house around the corner. Private houses were much more difficult to get into than apartment buildings, and this was the first one Harriet had managed. It belonged to a Mrs. Agatha K. Plummer, who was a very strange, rather theatrical lady who had once married a man of considerable means. She was now divorced, lived alone, and apparently talked on the telephone all day. Harriet had found this much out from first listening to several conversations between Mrs. Plummer's maid and an overly friendly garbage man. Harriet had pretended to play ball while the garbage was being picked up. Just yesterday, she had discovered that by timing it exactly, she had just enough time to jump in the dumbwaiter and slide the door closed before the maid completed one of her frequent trips up and down the stairs. The dumbwaiter was no longer used, but fortunately had not been boarded up. Since there was a small crack in the door, Harriet could see and hear perfectly. She approached the house, looked through the kitchen windows, and saw the maid preparing a tray. She knew then that the next step would be to take the tray to the second floor. Not a moment to lose. The maid went into the pantry. Harriet stepped through the kitchen door and in one jump was in the dumbwaiter. She barely got the door slid down again before the maid was back in the room. The maid was humming, "Miss America, look at her, Miss America," in a tuneless sort of way. Then the tray was ready. The maid picked it up and left the room. Simultaneously, Harriet started pulling on the ropes that hoisted the dumbwaiter. Terrified, she heard a lot of creaking. This would never do. Maybe she could bring some oil. She arrived at the second floor. Her heart was beating so fast she was almost unable to breathe. She looked through the crack. The first thing she saw was a huge four-poster bed in the middle of which Mrs. Plummer sat, propped against immense pillows, telephone in hand, surrounded by magazines, books, candy boxes, and a litter of pink baby pillows. "Well," Mrs. Plummer was saying decisively into the telephone, "I have discovered the secret of life." Wow, thought Harriet. "My dear, it's very simple. You just take to your bed. You just refuse to leave it for anything or anybody." Some secret, thought Harriet. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard of. Harriet hated bed anyway. In and out was her motto, and the less time there, the better. "Oh, yes, darling, I know you can't run away from life. I agree with you. I loathe people that do that. But you see, I'm not. While I'm lying here, I'm actually working, because, you see, and this is the divine part, I'm deciding on a profession."
You must be 102, thought Harriet. You better get going. The maid came in with the tray.
Put it down there,
said Mrs. Plummer rather crossly, then went back to the phone. Harriet wrote in her notebook. It's just what old Golly says. Rich people are boring. She says when people don't do anything, they don't think anything. And when they don't think anything, there's nothing to think about them. If I had a dumb waiter, I would look in it all the time to see if anybody was in it. As though she were reading Harriet's mind, Mrs. Plummer said to the maid,
Did you hear a creak just now in that old dumbwaiter?
No, ma'am, said the maid.
It was probably my imagination.
She went back to the telephone.
My dear, I have infinite possibilities. Now, don't you think I would make a marvelous actress? Or there's painting I could paint. What do you think of that? Well, darling, I'm only 40. Think of Gauguin.
Harriet started, very slowly, heart pounding, to pull the ropes that would start her downward. It had occurred to her that she'd better exit while Mrs. Plummer was blathering away, or she would certainly be heard. There was a tiny creak as she got near the bottom, but she was fairly certain no one heard it. There, the main floor. She peeked into the kitchen. Empty. Could she make it? She scrambled down and ran for her life. I have never run so fast, she thought, as she careened around the corner. Panting, she sat on some steps and took out her book. I think this might be too dangerous an assignment, but I would like to know what job she takes. But how can you work lying down? How does she pay for anything just lying there? I guess she just lives on her husband's money. Does my mother mooch off my father? I'll never do that. Look at poor Sport. He has too much to do already without me lying up in the bed all day eating. Harriet had 3 more steps before she was finished for the day, but before she continued, she decided to stop by and see Sport. On the way there, she got thirsty and stopped in her favorite luncheonette for an egg cream. It was her favorite, because it was there that she had first begun to hear what peculiar things people say to each other. She liked to sit at the counter with her egg cream and let the voices from the tables behind her float over her head. Several conversations were always going on at once. Sometimes she would play a game and not look at the people until from listening to them she had decided what they looked like. Then she would turn around and see if she were right.
A chocolate egg cream, please.
Certainly, Harriet. How are you?
Okay.
Harriet sat down, pleased that she was no